The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Some real Sixers basketball to talk about as we have two bubble games down. The Sixers 1-1 so far. Danny Pommel is here with you once again. This is Sixers Talk brought to you by Wilmington University, Wilmu Works. Ben Barry, our esteemed co-host and producer, here with us as always. Paul Hudrick not available today. He is circumnavigating the globe trying to cure world peace and world hunger and everything else. But we'll see him on the next podcast. But Ben, I don't know, man. Sixers Twitter is a different kind of animal, so that colors my opinion and the angst that fans are feeling a little bit. But a lot of uneasy people out there, Twitter or not, Sixers here, you know, survived the San Antonio Spurs, depleted San Antonio Spurs, who didn't have LaMarcus Aldridge and a bunch of other guys, Marco Bellinelli. But Shake Milton bails them out on a three that – it looked like he wasn't even expecting to get the basketball, but it was nothing but net. Everybody celebrated. More importantly, for chemistry's sake, him and Joel seemed to be getting along really well. Body language is great between them. Shake goes from having a donut and three turnovers in the first game to 16 points in the second. What are your impressions of this team as we got two bubble games down?
Not hopeful. I'm not optimistic.
What
about that gave you optimism? What about that gave you hope? Man, I know I was on here Sixers and five going to the Eastern Conference Finals, blah, blah, blah. After that game and where T.J. Warren lit us up for 53 like a Christmas tree, There's nothing optimistic or hopeful to come out of this team. And the defense has been awful. Brett Brown has said it. It's disrespectful to every fan out there that the T.J. Warren put up 53 points on them. And last night they had a decent lead and let it up in the last, 2 minutes? No, it's nothing good coming out of this. Yeah, they got a win. It's a moral victory at best. And it's a win in the column, but no, it's not acceptable.
I'm going to throw some numbers at you that would back up what you're saying. They went from up 14 in the fourth quarter to down 4 in the final minute. They gave up 43 points in the fourth quarter to the San Antonio Spurs after giving up 46 to the freaking Pacers. So that's 44 and a half points in the fourth quarter that they're giving up on average here in the bubble. Concern is a good point to make because you look at, this team was supposed to be built for defense. That's what Elton Brand trumpeted and told everyone that he was building a team that was prepare for the playoffs or projected to go far in the playoffs because they were built around defense. And here we are after all this hiatus and time, the Sixers finally have a chance to hang their hat and have a calling card. It's like, this is the identity of the team and the defense is null and void. They're in shootouts with these two teams so far. Luckily, the Washington Wizards are on the schedule next, so maybe they can string a couple of wins together. Something that we hope this team would do is kind of get a rhythm going here in the bubble. And, you know, I went on the limb and said they'd be 6-2, 7-1 here in the bubble. I'm not even sure if they'll be 5-3 if they continue to play like they've been playing. Ben Simmons fouls out. Joel Embiid had one rebound in the first half. So the rhythm is weird. But if you're looking for a place to give some props, Tobias Harris, man, we had said he had been looking good in those scrimmages. He has been balling, and he's bringing his hard hat and lunch pail for sure because I think he has been a good second fiddle to Joel, who has been absolutely dominant. But I really liked his body language a lot more this last game. And I don't know, man, I just hope that they can figure out some of these identity issues because it just seems like it's just they're always – once one thing gets figured out, they're tripping over something else.
Okay, we jumped over to Lee, but we ended on Tobias Harris. So, no, Tobias is still work. He's still a work in progress on defense. But his offense is coming along, picking his spot, creating separation. He's hitting threes consistently. Thank you for that. He is playing out. He's playing hard out there. I don't like. He's making shots. That's his most important contribution to the team. Like, because you can't, unfortunately, make that much money and not make big shots in a game, not get your own shot, not create space. So good for him. Still got to work on the defense. It's gotten better. Still not where it should be. We're going back to the defense where I started off hot and heavy on this thing. Ben Simmons.
Yeah.
My brother. Maybe we're all to blame for this. You, me, Paul. Out of Zoo.
I don't know if I like where you're going with this, but I'm going to listen.
Amy, Serena, we all talking about how often he should shoot, when he should shoot the three-pointers, get more comfortable in the flow of the game. He's a primary defender against T.J. Warren, it seemed like. T.J. went bananas.
Yeah.
Other night when they played the Spurs. No, I'm not done yet. He's primary defender against DeMar DeRozan. His defense has looked lackadaisical at best. Like, it's the worst thing from these first two games. I don't even know what's the second worst at this point. It's not good enough. Like, we hailed him as a legit contender. Not saying he would win it, but for defensive player of the year. Like, he made strides that his name should arguably be in the running. I know they're not counting these playing games right now, and it's everything before the season was suspended. But, man, like, if I'm telling someone how good you are and I show them these two games, it's not cutting it. DeMar DeRozan got he got every shot he wanted last night from anywhere on the floor. And I know in the fourth quarter, this isn't on him as much as it is on Brett Brown. There's no reason he should have been playing the five with five fouls. Like, you can't be aggressive at that point. Can't be aggressive with five fouls. You can't be aggressive with five fouls playing the center position. So that needs to change ASAP.
Now, T.J. Warren was all on one. I'm not going to look at – I mean, no one could stop him. So I'm not going to look at that as like an indictment on Ben and his defense.
Huh? Put an elbow in his chest.
Yeah, I mean, that's not necessarily his M.O., man. That's like MB's more of the enforcer, or Mike Scott. And Joel is just going to play strong defense, try to get the ball in transition. I mean, he's a pest defensively. He's long. He's lengthy. He gets in the passing lanes like – obviously, he gets steals and things like that. All I'm saying is T.J. Warren, like, that can't even be an example of what Ben's defense is or isn't, because no one can stop him. He had a career night, and people are calling him the MVP of the bubble based on how he's played so far. 34-11, I think he had in his last game, 53 against the Sixers. So I don't think that's a good example.
About that. I'm supposed to feel better about that? You let T.J. Warren light you up? Come on, man. Have some dignity.
It doesn't matter if it was T.J. Warren or DeMar DeRozan. I think the point is that –
Oh, it matters. It matters.
I think but it's Ben's comfortability out there. And I saw some comfortability from him, particularly the fact that he took two threes in one of those exhibition games. I saw him put Luka Doncic in a straitjacket. I saw him, you know, do asserting himself in other ways that I haven't seen him assert himself in these past two games. So that's probably what gives me the most pause. Like, DeMar DeRozan's going to get his points. He had 30 points. Like, that's what he does. He's a scorer. Ben had an incredibly off night, obviously, because the calls weren't going his way. And that changes the way you play, the way you play defense, especially if you got four or five fouls. You're trying not to foul out the game. So, yeah, I see what you're saying in some aspects, but I am not using that as an indictment on Ben altogether. I do feel like you kind of touch on, you know, Ben being at the five and things like that. I think, you know, the rotation is where I'm looking at Brett Brown a bit and trying to figure out, you know, what he's trying to do with where he puts guys in the game and whatnot. And I hate jumping around to a bunch of different topics, but the Shake Milton situation seemed like an incredible fit. So far, two games in and the ones that count, we're not quite sure if it's the fit And you got guys like Alec Burks who are showing that, you know, his veteran presence can bring some real stability to the lineup. And I think that this next game is going to tell a lot. These next couple games is going to tell a lot because we can't go into the postseason still playing guessing games about how the offense is going to go and where Ben's going to play, whether it's the four, the one, and things like that. Like, this all has to be solidified, and the identity has to be – because, hey, you kind of started off the podcast with it. This is not going to be the cakewalk type of first-round series that people may have expected, you know, from years past. So this could be a second-round exit type of game. I've seen Toronto play. I've seen Milwaukee play. The Sixers, as they are currently playing, are not better than either of those teams. So – All I'm trying to say is I think I look at what's happening now, and if they don't figure it out, Sixers fans could be in for some disappointment. I would not lay it at Ben's feet or his defense or what have you, because I feel like that'll come along.
I'm not laying everything on Ben's feet. What I'm saying is between him and Joel, they're the two most important defenders on
200%. Absolutely.
And Ben just did not hold up. He has not held up his part of the bargain. Moving on to Shake. Incredible bounce back game, because that game against Indiana was horrific. Game winner. Phenomenal. Had a good step back. Looked more comfortable in the flow of the game. Maybe it's possible because he wasn't pressure coming up court the entire time like he was against Indiana. But he showed that he can ball.
Yeah, T.J. McConnell was in his shorts. And it's difficult because as just a guy you know. You know what I mean? T.J. Right. knows him. He knows his tendencies. He knows the sets the team right. runs. So that it's a tough first game for a dude to play against a former teammate.
I will compare the T.J. McConnell thing to a brother rivalry. The younger brother might be more talented, but the older brother has more experience. And since he's the older brother,
excellent.
He's like, yeah. I know exactly how to get it under his skin, get him irritated, to get him off his game, because I'm not going to beat him in a straight one-on-one. So that's
TJ
that
had Joel and Shake arguing with each other.
He did. Like, TJ, we loved him when he's here. And I compare TJ to Matthew Dellavedova. Maybe a little better. You like Deli and TJ if they're on your team. If they're not on your team, you can't stand them. They're an annoyance. You want to know why? They're the net at a barbecue. You're hanging out. You're eating. You're talking to family and friends and people you haven't seen or whatever. And it's just a net bugging you in your face all around your food. And that's what he was. And that T.J. McConnell being the net, not calling him a net, but just that annoyance, Shake got to him and got under his skin. Brett Brown definitely has to figure out these rotations. I thought we were done with this Josh Richardson project of him being the backup point guard. We talked about it a little before the pod. He doesn't need to be the backup point guard. He has limitations. I don't really think he's aware of his limitations. He goes off script and does whatever he wants. Only difference between him and J.R. Smith is J.R. Smith, actually, they both might be irrational confidence guy. Richardson is a better player than J.R. right now.
Bro, stop.
You're shaking your head.
Stop.
No, they go off script and do things they don't need to be doing.
Hey, dreams come into reach at Wilmington University. There's a local university that's ready to bring your dreams into reach. It's Wilmington University. WilmU helps working adults reach their career goals through accredited and affordable degrees and certificates to reach new heights in your field. WilmU works. Find out why at wilmu.edu. Well, here's a reason why Josh might, you know, go off script a little bit in your eyes, because Brett said after the game, you know, Josh isn't a guy that we run sets for. And I've encouraged him to try to get his get his at some point during the game and the flow of things. So Josh is out there trying to get his because that's what the coach told him. But at the same time, when he was at Miami, he played a lot of that point guard for the team, you know, trying to create and whatnot. And that's something that Jimmy Butler brought this team that they were hoping Josh Richardson would come and kind of replace the fact that he could bring the ball up the floor, you know, create his own shot, do some pick and roll and things like that. Suddenly, though, the pick and roll option has become like Ben and Shake are like a great pick and roll option. So that's like one thing where Josh kind of is like a man without a place sometimes, where he doesn't really you know, they're not running sets for him. He's playing a shooting guard role, but he's not shooting. So, like, where does he fit? So I think the defensive side is where he can kind of hang his hat, and we haven't seen him having as much effectiveness there. I think the thing for me when I look at, like, the 30,000-foot view is I'm looking at it like, are these guys together, and is the chemistry and camaraderie there? I'm not sure. How's the coach doing with the rotations? I'm not sure. And then the other thing, which is kind of the elephant in the room, is Ben Simmons still isn't shooting the ball. I mean, the dude went to a sports psychologist reportedly. We saw him chuck up 2 threes in the exhibition game, making one. We haven't seen him shoot the ball yet. I saw one moment in the Pacers game where I was like, Ben, why didn't you shoot that? I haven't seen moments like that since. And we've talked here on the podcast, especially on the last pod, about, you know, Ben getting his in the flow and things like that. But I saw one moment where he didn't take an opportunity that he should have. And it's just never going to work if he's not willing to keep the defense honest in that regard. Yeah, that's what these seeding games are for. Hopefully they can come around. As it stands right now, they look like, to me, a 6 seed. They don't look like world beaters. You know, we all pick them to go far and do well, and we just fall for so many of these little, you know, things. And I feel like they pull you back in with Joel with his Instagram post talking about, you know, Shake and Michael Jordan and all that stuff. So I think some of the blame has to be on us because we just, like, are so invested and then, like, fall back and then can pull back in. Like, I think we need to kind of weed through, like, what's real and what's not. So are the Sixers fool's gold at this point? I will not go that far. I just feel like if we don't see progress, we need to lower our playoff expectations.
We definitely need to lower these playoff expectations.
Well, are you lowering them? How low? If they play Boston in the first round, are you worried? If they play the Pacers, Heat, like, where is your level of concern?
Remember when I said Sixers in 5?
Right.
Sixers would be on vacation in 5 weeks.
Come on, man. You're laying it on too thick. Really?
You're laying it on too thick? Yo, in 5 weeks, I don't know what's going to happen with baseball. I don't know what's going to happen with the NFL. We might only have Flyers hockey in this city to root for.
And so, they seem like they look pretty good. Check out the Flyers Talk podcast good. When you get a chance with Jordan Hall and Katie Emmer.
And I produce it, Ben Berry. So, no. So, no, they lost to the Pacers without Sabonis. They had another key injury. I can't think of
Malcolm Brogdon.
Thank you, Malcolm Brogdon. We all agree on Milwaukee. This Raptors team looks good. They look very good, man. Right now.
They do. They beat the Lakers.
They beat the Lakers. I know they had the Celtics number through the season, but this Sixers team has not looked good since the season restarted.
They just haven't looked better. I don't know if they haven't necessarily – they haven't looked good. I'm sorry. You're right about that. I just don't – they look like a 6 seed. That's what they look like. They look like they're the 6 seed.
They look like a 6 seed. And I know we argued on the pod. We argued in the office. We've argued since we've been home. That right? I've been high on Miami all year. And people have told me I'm crazy. They're too young. They don't have the guys. Can only go this far if Jimmy's your best player. I've been high on Miami all year because I think Spoelstra is that good of a coach. I think they have a good young nucleus. Correct. You don't know what you're going to get with these young guys because they haven't played in playoff basketball yet. No one's played in this playoff basketball before. And I'm more comfortable betting on them because I'm pretty sure Spo's not going to put out a lineup that has no business to be out there. Sixers look like a 6 seed at best. Early playoff exit.
See, what I'm afraid of and what I'm disappointed in, obviously, you know, not getting further than last year is just like a deal breaker for me. Like, I'm ready to really change some things around if that happens again. But I'm disappointed in the fact that the way it's shaping up, from what I see, you know, some teams have played 3 games, some teams 2, but – it looks like I thought there would be more parity. I thought there would be, like, teams who, you know, would rise up from lower seeds and be able to challenge those top two seeds in each conference. But to me, it looks like Lakers, Bucks, Raptors, Nuggets, like it's just going to be the better teams. And that's a little unfortunate for me because I do like that parity, particularly like, you know, the NFL will have like wild card teams, you know, come from, you know, that position and win the whole thing. So NHL as well, Major League Baseball as well. But basketball, man, just is so like driven by stars. Anthony Davis has just looked incredible. LeBron is doing his thing. Giannis is who he is. The Raptors are looking good with their approach, with the team aspect, with OG Anunoby and Kyle Lowry and the whole bit. But I'm a little disappointed in that. I thought there would be like a little seam, like some daylight for the Sixers to like rise to the occasion and be more than what we expected. This is a Hollywood script, it seems like. It seems like that's just a pipe dream, because you can't have this many issues. It seems like there's just too many things for them to work out, for them to be a championship contender.
Way too many things to work out. Way too many. Like, the shooting still isn't what we all would like it to be. A lot of people are upset about the coaching. Back to your point about the parity. I actually think there will be more parity this year. Not much. But in the NBA, if you have the best player on the court, you're most likely going to win. And with a seven-game series, the better team is going to win. Very rarely are you going to have like a true
underdog.
Now, hold on.
Now, the better team or the team with the best players? Because that could be two different things.
I think it depends who you ask. The better team is going to have the best player.
Well, I feel like the Sixers – it's just, you say that, I feel like the Sixers are that dichotomy. Like, they have the better players in all of these Eastern Conference potential matchups, excluding the Bucks. But they don't have the best team, man. It just the way it's fitting just doesn't seem like it's gelling. And then all these defensive problems have popped up all of a sudden. Like, bro, you can't be – it's like the Sixers' defense has the coronavirus. Like, it's in quarantine. It's bedridden because it didn't make it inside the bubble, apparently, because none of their schemes and fit are working when it comes on the defensive end. But then on the offensive end, it's like they're trading shot for shot. So it gives me pause, and I'm sure Sixers fans out here feel the same way. That's why we're talking about it, because from everything I've seen – it looks like to me like, you know, Brett has some figuring out to do and other things that I've mentioned, but it's like the more issues that you think have been subsided, more pop up. So, you know, what it's like the chicken pox or something like that. You think you got it beat and it'd be another bump or something is itching somewhere else. But are you nervous, concerned, or are you just, it is what it is? Like, where are you at?
I'm not nervous or concerned. I'll tell y'all what I thought it was going to be. Sixer season's over in the next 5 weeks. It's a wrap.
You come back to reality so fast. Like, so fast. Like, one pod to the other. Friday is Sixers in five. Tuesday is Sixers out in 5 weeks.
I didn't want to be the Debbie Downer on Friday. You know, 5 weeks. I haven't seen anything for them to tell me otherwise. I don't think they're making it past the second round in the finals. I've been a big – we all agree they're not passing Milwaukee. I've always said this season that the Heat will beat them in a seven-game series. I don't think anybody wants them to run into Toronto on this pod or in the office. The Celtics is the one team in the second round I could see them playing and actually getting by, but that was before this restart, because it doesn't look like the Sixers – like the same problems, whether it's the turnovers or the bad rotations, the lapse in defense assignments, it's still there.
Speaking of bad rotations, people were having fits with Raul Neto getting minutes at the backup point guard. He is what he is, and he's quick and has some of those TJ McConnell tendencies, particularly with the basketball. But, you know, he's getting stripped. He's getting blown by, you know, guys got the ball on a string and kind of making them dance and things like that. So, you know, I look at how Brett is figuring out the rotation. Of course, he's using these games and what coaches do to try to figure out, you know, who can show up for him, and Raul Neto is definitely a veteran. But Alec Burks looks like the guy that should be in the rotation, and particularly with Glenn Robinson III still banged up and hurt. He was playing well for the Sixers. He's been out with his hip pointer from what he suffered in a collision in the last scrimmage game, I believe it was. But nonetheless, if it's going to be nine guys, you got guys like Furkan, who is some timey, particularly defensively. He was knocking down some shots against the Spurs, which were definitely timely and important. But you got to go with some rocks when it comes to the postseason. So if I'm looking at the bench, obviously Al Horford is the sixth man. Furkan has been the first sub off the bench right after Al. So with Glenn Robinson out, like, he's going to have to lean on Furkan more. But Alec Burks is a dude I feel like needs to get more shine. And he's showing that he deserves it. He plays well with whoever's out there on the floor. He can handle the ball. And he can get to the line if he has to and knock down some free throws. So I see a lot of promise when it comes to Joel. And I see Ben needing to fix some things. Tobias Harris shows me a lot of promise as well. I just feel like if Shake is going to continue to grow and progress, this game is really important. And Brett's going to have to figure out the rotations to complement when Shake is out of the game, because you're going to have to keep that same, you know, Ben at the four and another guard who can shoot and set things up at running the point.
Yeah, the rotation, I don't know why Neto is the backup point guard. I don't know why he was – well, not the backup, but getting minutes.
But he was getting minutes, yeah. He's getting, yeah. It was just puzzling a lot of people, so.
It's really bad because Trey Burke got 19 the other night.
Oh, he was cooking.
He was cooking. Something I've never seen Neto do, ever. There's no evidence that he's ever done it. So, yeah, Burks, get him some run. Like, if Shake's the starting point guard and we're taking Ben off the ball, we got to get someone else to – even if Ben was getting a lot of time playing the one, you have to have someone else there. Josh Richardson, isn't it? So, I'm okay if – Burks gets some more time off the bench, or hopefully Glenn Robinson comes back healthy soon. They got to find an answer, because Neto, like, seemed like a nice guy. It's not the answer. Not the answer.
Do you feel like there's someone, like, he needs to pull Mike Scott off the bench, or do you like what you're seeing from Matisse? Who are the guys there that you feel like have shown you some promise or might be an answer to some of the issues they're having with the rotation?
So I like what I see from Matisse off the bench. But every time I go to text somebody, whether it's you and Paul, some of my friends in my 6 years and five group chat, some old friends I work with in the business.
You have a group chat named 6 years and five?
Yeah, because every time there was a sports debate and someone would ask for my opinion, I would just say 6 years and five. So that's where that started.
It'd be like, so these aren't all Sixers fans. This is just some random name you came up with because that's what you would say.
Yeah, we talk about the Super Bowl. Everyone's giving predictions, and mine was just Sixers and five. Or the Sixers lose two games in the series, I'd be like Sixers and five. So.
You're so witty, Ben. So witty.
I'm a big personality. So every time I'm like, oh, Matisse, good defense. Oh, he had a three. Nice drive to the basket. I'm about to go send a text. Then he gets a bad, bad foul. And it's just like, they're going to throw that right back at me if I
see. He reaches in a lot. He reaches in a lot.
So much. I would be okay with Mike getting some more time.
Do you see him playing the 3-4? Like, where do you see him fitting in?
It would be the 4. It would be the 4 most likely. Maybe you put him in the 3, but you got Burks, you got Furkan, you got Matisse. So I think if Joel gets in foul trouble or Al gets in foul trouble, maybe one of them needs to sit a game for rest or injury. I don't know why anybody sit for rest at this point. But, yeah, maybe you give Mike some more running time, some more play. I don't think the answer is on the bench, though, to help with the ball movement, someone else bringing the ball up the court, though. NBC Universal has something new for you. Peacock, the new streaming service that has all the best TV shows, including 30 Rock, Law & Order SVU, as well as Parks and Rec. Plus, great movies, including one of my favorites, Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Peacock is the exclusive home for all of NBC Sports free Premier League coverage In Deep with Ryan Lochte and Lost Speedways, hosted by Dale Earnhardt Jr. Learn more at PeacockTV.com.
How hot do you think the seat is under Brett Brown with these new issues arising, with the fourth quarter being an issue, with the continued, you know, motivation? I don't know, is the thing of trying to get Ben to shoot the basketball more from the outside and the perimeter. What do you think he's feeling the heat? Like, where do you think he's at with this?
I don't know if he's feeling it. I know he's aware of it. You ever walk into the kitchen and like, yo, why is it so hot in here? Yo, someone left the oven on?
Right.
I feel like that's what he's going through right now. Like, yo, it's so warm in here. Yo, Danny, you left the oven on. Or Ben, you left the oven on. I feel like that's what he's going through right now. I think it's unanimous around the city that they have to make the finals.
The NBA finals?
They have to make the NBA finals.
Woo!
He's gone. I don't think that's that far.
I don't think it's that steep of a curve for him. Like
it's Joe Girardi in 2017 with the Yankees when they went to the AL championship games.
ALCS.
Yeah. That was a good team. He lost his job. I know there was theories about whether players were drowning him out because he's too old school, blah, blah, blah. But you shouldn't go that far and lose your job. But we're in a new day and age with sports. I'm not advocating for anyone getting fired. I saw people on Twitter last night, especially going after our boy Paul, because he's not calling for Brett Brown's job. Paul definitely holds him accountable for things. I don't know what else you can do if they don't make the finals. Yeah, there's a conversation. They go to Eastern Conference Finals. But, like, do you see that happening? No.
I think that they still have a chance to get to the Eastern Conference Finals. They can't see the Bucks or the Raptors at any point if that's the case. I don't see how they avoid that. But I just feel like when I look at Brett, after a while, the message doesn't always get through. And that happens with any coach. Now, sometimes coaches can reinvent things and reinvent themselves and find a new way. And, you know, your boy Phil Jackson was always good at that. And whether, you know, the Zen Master stuff or, you know, giving the team books to read or something, you just have to find a way to motivate. And I think Brett is right on the cusp of losing that motivation because I don't know if it's an issue where sometimes, you know, your words fall on deaf ears because people have heard it so much, or the fact that they don't think that there'll be like any steep repercussions, like a benching or losing playing time or something like that, if they don't, you know, fall in line with what the scheme is or execution and things like that. But I just feel like he is right on the cusp of not having the oomph and the effect with the players that will show results. And that is just a dangerous place to be. Maybe, you know, Joel is really just taking on a lot of leadership role, you know, whether it was the tough love he gave Shake Milton in game one against the Pacers, where if you read his lips, he kind of like told Shake he would slap the BS out of him. But then in game two, he's helping Shake up. He's the first one to congratulate him when he hits the three. Him and Shake are communicating and talking, and after the game, you know, they're you know, singing each other's praises. So there's an avenue, I think, for the players kind of bail Brett out of this predicament, but I think he actually is going to have to coach his way out of it. And I have not seen him out-coach opposing coaches in a way that's effective over a long period of time. And that's what I'm most worried about, because if Brad Stevens or Nick Nurse or, you know, whoever, Mike Budenholzer, has a chance to match up with Brett, and I don't have the confidence that Brett's going to be able to outmatch them, why would he lead the team if I feel like he doesn't have what it takes to get over and pass these other coaches and outmaneuver them?
I don't know why. I have nothing to tell you.
I know, right?
To tell you everything's going to be okay.
I think it's just more questions than answers at this point. because you can sense the frustration from maybe emanating from Orlando, not necessarily frustration with the team and how things are playing out. I mean, they won last night. So, I mean, like, take it all with a grain of salt. But at the same time, it's more, well, what about this? Well, this doesn't look so good and whatnot. So it's like you're on a seesaw back and forth of, like, buying in but, like, not believing what you see at the same time.
No one should be buying in. Like, nothing's changed. Yeah, things look better, but some things look worse. This is the bad relationship where someone says they're going to make changes, and 2 weeks in, I want Brett to succeed. I want him to prove people wrong. The hot seat is warm at the least, if not burning. If he doesn't get it done, his time here is up, in my opinion. Not saying I want him to be fired. Or I see that happening. I see them parting ways. So, yo, get it together or start updating that resume.
Yeah, it's a cut and dry, right? It's a pretty unforgiving industry, to say the least. But do you feel like he was put in a position to succeed? Because so many people have felt like the fit of the free agents and the players that they have don't quite mesh. Obviously, the Al Horford situation. You are on the fence about Jason Richardson. Tobias, people have questioned, although he has been playing well in my eyes these last couple games. Do you feel like organizationally he wasn't set up to succeed, or is it more his scheme and interaction with the players? Because, you know, when I look at Elton Brand, you know, over this team has underperformed. Elton Brand said this would be a championship or bust type of season. Like they were putting it all their chips in the table with this team, and they would really succeed in the postseason. But I haven't seen that yet. And he's the one, you know, choosing the free agents and paying them. So are we putting too much on Brett?
I've been under the belief that we are putting too much on Brett. I thought that the Horford signing, I thought it was awful. I didn't like what many people told me was an upgrade from Josh Richardson. From J.J. Redick to Josh Richardson, how people told me how great Tobias Harris was going to be, even though I saw him for 3 or 4 months last year. With all that being said, with the current construction of this lineup, a lot of people believe Brett signed off on all these moves, and it was only done because he gave the approval. He said he can get it done with these things. That's true. Like, there's no – he got to look himself in the mirror. He takes that blame just as much as Elton Brand. They're both to blame, in my opinion, for the construction of this team and from everything. Al Horford, Tobias, and many more. With that being said, I don't know how the people above Elton and Brett can look down and say, oh, we're going to put this all on Brett, or he's got to go. We'll keep Elton, because if Elton brings in his guy for a coach and things are not much better, you're not going to get rid of Elton right away. Or if you do, whoever that new GM comes in is going to want his own coach. So I guess everyone needs to figure out, the people up top to make the decisions need to figure out how much of this is really on Brett, how much of it is also on Elton.
Yeah, I feel like Elton is sought after. Other teams want him. So that in and of itself brings his value up. Where Brett, I don't know where he would land if he left here. I mean, obviously he's the head coach of the Australian national team, so he has a soft landing spot if he were to leave the 76ers or be ousted. But I look at Elton as someone who has experience as a player, which is unparalleled in the GM position. He also knows this organization, having been here a couple of times. So I see his fit as being more homogenous with making the Sixers a success than I do see Brett's fit. Because I feel like Brett, even though you know, he came from the Spurs organization. We haven't quite seen that same, you know, he's helped create the culture here. No, no doubt about it. That is all him, because he has been the mainstay through this process period and up until where we are now, which I still consider the process, because as long as Ben and Joel are on the team and they're both competing for championships, then we're still processing. But I feel like Brett hasn't quite delivered. Not that this was what he said he would deliver, but some of the expectation is you bring some of that championship pedigree from the Spurs here to Philly. And I just haven't seen that seamlessness. How about you look at the Spurs, and they have so many young guards. It was a couple of times out there. Patty Mills has the long dreads. His hair used to be short. So yeah. I'm looking and I'm thinking, oh, that's Patty Mills. Like, nah, that's like, you know, another kid that they have developed in, or, you know, people who they feel like have value, and they just look like Spurs players when they're out there. Greg Popovich, the longest tenure coach in any major sport. But when I see the Sixers, I don't see that same footprint, that same blueprint of what a Sixers player is. You know what I'm saying? I see Ben, I see Joel, I see, you know, a little bit of disjointedness there. But in Brett's defense,
in 2001, did anyone think the Spurs were what they are now? Like, they're like, oh, that looks like a Spurs player. And
well, how about that? But no, this is what I'll say. In 98, when they won that championship from the lockout shortened season, it was the Twin Towers. It was David Robinson and Tim Duncan. And David Robinson was like, he was like the Spurs, the face of the prototype. Right. Yeah. And then you bring in Tim Duncan, who kind of has some of that same, you know, mild-mannered, you know, right, humble, you know, overachieved, you know.
Bad dresser.
Well, maybe, but at
see,
the same time.
You ever
time,
see that image?
Of course, the baggy jeans. Yeah, absolutely. But at the same time, it created that atmosphere and culture. And then all of a sudden, you got these other guys coming in who also had that workman-like attitude with Manu Ginobili. And
so whose fault is it that Joel wasn't with a clear-cut vet this entire time he's been in Philly?
Yeah, you know what? I can't say fault, but this is Sam Hinkie's design. They didn't let him see it through. But as his design took shape, there was no veteran here to bring Joel along or to bring Ben along. You know, they tried to get guys. Elton Brand was playing that role at one point to try to be a veteran presence on the bench. But if I got to say fault, I don't know. That's a good question, man. I just feel like they have not benefited from the fact that there hasn't been that veteran presence. And I think it shows, because sometimes the roles are a little skewed, you know, what Joel's role is as opposed to, you know, what like guys like Al and Tobias's roles are. Like, I think Tobias is the guy who they would love to have like as that veteran presence and stay with the organization for a while and bring along rookies. And you've seen it with Matisse. We touched on that in other podcasts, but whose fault is it? I got to say, in a sense, like, you look at Brett, once you decide to go along with this rebuild and, hey, this is the plan we're trying to enact and we want you to be a part of it, like, you're going to be the fall guy, whether you have to be or not, whether it's fair or not, I should say. But that's a good question, man. Whose fault is it? It's just kind of a victim of circumstance. Like, they oust Sam Hinkie, the Colangelos come along with their idea, and now here's Elton Brand. You got Brett Brown, who also was an interim GM at one point. So you got all these voices and people, the changing of the guard in the front office and things like that. Like, how, it has been no stability. So and that would be a thing where I hope would come out at some point after all this process is over. Like, who had most of the say when the draft picks, like, how much input did Brett have? How much was it just Elton or the Colangelos or what have you? So I think that's like a great question to ask, because we're all trying to figure out, you know, point the finger or identify things of like, okay, we get it here and this means that. But I don't think there's always like straight answers or straight lines when it comes to the Sixers situation.
No, you're completely accurate, because since so much has changed from the start of the process to now.
I'm right. Ben said I was right, everybody. Mark it down. Can you make a note of that over there? Thank you. Go ahead.
Danny Palmeiras was right. I mean, it's going to happen sooner or later. There hasn't been a consistent – we're on a third GM. Same one head coach, but see, the philosophy has changed from
– Right, GM.
So, and during the rebuild, they weren't going to get any veterans. No veteran was coming here to lose. Go retire. They're not coming here just to sign up for losing. And I think that was a lot to ask when those young players at the time. Like, I always felt bad for Erwin's Noel. Like, he came here just to lose. And he's a competitor. He didn't want to just come here to lose. So, I don't know how much that weighed on any of the players, which is probably more than anybody wants to admit how exhausting it was to be here. But who – most of the responsibility, who bears most of it, whose shoulders it falls on? Anyone that had say, you know, every GM, every coach, anybody that made decisions, scouts, everybody, that there wasn't more of a veteran presence or voice in these young guys' ear. Just tell them, like, no, let's do it this way. But with all that being said, I also put it with some of these players. Because
like who exactly? Like, you mean the guys are here now?
Yeah, some of the guys are here now. Some of the guys before, like with all the greats in the NBA, and so many legends that are happy to help reach out and mentor these younger players. Like, hey, let's just do it this way. Try to conduct yourself like this, like, because you're going to be a target if this doesn't succeed. People are going to blame you. Like, I think some of the players, but I think that comes with maturity and knowing, like, where you are in life. So maybe I'm putting too much on them. But they could have reached out to some veterans, whether they were still in the league or out of the league. Like, hey, there's no one in Philly to help me with this. I need help. What should I do? Or do you know anyone? Or do it's you funny. Know anyone?
That,
or
that's what Magic that Johnson right was trying direction. To do with Ben Simmons. That's exactly yes. what Magic was trying to do with Ben Simmons. But yes. obviously, like, that, the optics of that don't look good. Like, I'm not sending my all-star point guard to go work out with the GM or front office member of, like, a rival team who could possibly woo him away. But I think some things have come out, though, because Michael Carter Williams, when he was traded, you heard some things from his camp. I think it was one of his parents who was talking about how, you know, Michael often played a little bit banged up or injured and didn't say anything because that was kind of like the feeling of the organization that, you know, we need to all band together and get past this stuff. So just the fact that he was making sacrifices that didn't go that went unnoticed, and he got no credit for it and then got traded away. Jahlil Okafor, his dad, who, you know, make of it what you wish, but his dad also saying similar things, like, they don't put my son in positions to succeed. You know, they draft them and tell him one thing and then play him differently. So we have heard, like, things like that through the process, but I definitely want to make sure that, you know, some of those things and people are held accountable. But final thoughts as we wrap this thing up, because we will rejoin you guys Friday with more Sixers talk. Paul Hudrick will be back to chime in and give us a little bit more insight from his perspective. But any final thoughts from you, Ben?
My final thoughts are still the same. Basketball is back. I'm happy. Follow me on Instagram and Twitter, because I'm not above plugging myself.
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
I as an Indigo, M as a Mary, Ben Berry. Follow me. I put up great content from the podcast up on Twitter and Instagram. Let's do this.
That's true.
76ers fans, let's do this. I almost sound enthusiastic.
Bro, that was the most phony, lackluster cheer. 76ers fans, let's do this.
Go.
But hey, everybody's feeling a little weird. It's a little weird. You know, we got hurricane bearing down on the area. We got the Sixers being sometimey. This new starting point guard getting chewed out by the best player. Like, a lot of stuff was going on that doesn't quite make sense. But nonetheless, we soldier on here on Sixers Talk, brought to you by Wilmington University. Thank you for tuning in. For our esteemed producer and co-host, Ben Berry, I'm Danny Palmeiras. We will see you next time.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. Auto Trader.